Jim Watkins. I've known Jim for several years. We met through the Christian Humor Writers Group. And like I told you this morning, he can be a crazy guy. He's got the greatest sense of humor, but he's got a lot of good stuff to say. And he's going to tell you a little bit about his books, Communicate to Change Lives. He'll talk about that in his newest book that just was released not long ago. So I'll let him tell a little bit about himself. He is well established in the industry, and he knows a lot of people. He's just come on up here and do your thing, Jim, okay?
Thank you. It's good to be with you. Probably the best thing about me is my name is Jim Watkins. I love God. I love writing. I love speaking. I love my family. I love Chinese food. In that order. Well, today we're going to talk about I'm a giant killer. When I point to the sign, I want you to say,
I'm a giant killer.
Very good. If you have your Bibles, turn to 1 Samuel 17, beginning at verse 1. I'll be reading from the New Living Amplified King James Watkins Version. Now the publishers gathered together their editors from the far reaches of the country, and were gathered together at Eldridge, which belonged to the land of the Iowansteins. And there were also gathered there writers from throughout the region, and the editors stood on one side, and the writers gathered together on the other side. And behold, there was a great gulf between them. And there went out great editors from the camp of the publishers, who stood tall in the eyes of the writers. And the editors bore upon themselves weighty and impressive titles, and they were armed with powerful contracts, and yea, even rejection slips. And their pens were like weaver's beams weighing heavily upon the writers' manuscripts. And editors came forth as one, and called out from the panel to the writers, "Come forth and send us your manuscripts, for we not editors and you not writers. Send forth thy manuscript, and if they shall prevail our editorial committees, we shall serve thee with a contract. But yea, if they shall not, thou shalt receive thy SASE in return." And when the writers and those gathered with them heard these words of the publishers, verily they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now jump down to verse 28. Now David, a young writer from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, who had the anointing of the Lord upon his head, heard these sayings and spake to those about him, saying, "What art thou submitting to the publishers that encamp about us? For behold, I have brought forth a proposal the Lord hath given me." And the people answered after this manner, saying, "These editors are great and powerful, but we are struggling writers. The battle is too great for us." Now there are some giants in the land of publishing. There are fewer and fewer publishers who are producing fewer and fewer titles by fewer and fewer authors. According to Publishers Weekly, Christian publishers produced 7,500 titles in 2005. They produced 5,900 titles in 2006. So that's 1,600 fewer titles, or a 20% decrease. Thomas Nelson just this fall cut their product line from 750 to 375. It's the economy, students. At $50,000 a pop to produce and promote a book, publishers are hesitant and slightly crazy to go with an unknown author when they can squeeze another book out of an established author. And many, if not, are no longer accepting submissions other than agented only. And again, it's not the publishers are mean people, it's simply the economy, students. Why pay an editorial assistant, along with health and pension, when an agent can be the first reader? Tyndale House found that they received about one publishable manuscript per year through the slush pile, the unsolicited pile. And that's just poor stewardship. So if you're working on the great American novel, the odds are even, the giants are even bigger. Again, according to Publishers Weekly, of the 55,000 books published each year, only 3,500 are novels. Of that number, 120 are first-time authors. You do the math, it's only 7% of the market for novels, 1 out of 14. And if you can believe it, it gets worse. Only 1% of magazine and book manuscripts are accepted for publication. That means 99% get the, "I'm sorry, but your manuscript does not fit our editorial needs at this time." So after today, after you've been seminared and workshopped and paneled and keynoted and private appointed, and then this guy gets up and tells you more depressing news, you may feel the battle is too great. But I want you to repeat after me, loud and proud,
"I'm a giant killer."
I don't know. You don't sound really convinced of that. So, Twyla, if you would come up. Or no, Cynthia, come on up here, please. And we've got some ammo for you. We've got a shepherd's bag full of smooth stones.
And
oh, well, there you go. Please take, no, pass that all around and make sure it gets to everybody. So pass it to the back and then Kim, make sure it gets over to the other side. Make sure everybody gets a smooth stone before we're done here. Because I want you to walk away tonight knowing that you're a what? Very good, very good. Now, you're also going to quickly discover that I'm an ordained writer, so all my points begin with the same letter. So Roman numeral number one is perspective. Arabic number one is perspective of editors. I went to my first writer's conference with much fear and trembling because editors did look like bloodthirsty Philistines. I didn't dare talk to a single one. I learned a lot in seminars and workshops. I went away inspired. But I was still unwilling to send a manuscript to any of the giants of publishing. My second conference, I actually worked up enough nerve, enough courage to sign up for a private appointment. Now, even the word private appointment is a bit intimidating because most appointments in the past have involved somebody saying, this will only hurt a second or turn your head and cough. My appointment was with Les Stobie. He was with Here's Life. He is now an agent. Les is a physical giant. He is 6 feet tall, 250 pounds. He has hands the size of unabridged dictionaries. And he didn't say a word as he looked over my manuscript. He was eating an apple. He ate the stem. He ate the seeds. He ate the entire core. About 2 weeks later, I thought, the man is so fascinated by manuscript, the poor man doesn't realize he's actually eating the apple core, stem, and all. But at the time, I'm thinking, this is a rather vivid simile of what editors do to writers. And my fear of editors began to diminish when I became one. I was editor for 4 years, then editorial director at Wesleyan Publishing House in Indianapolis, and now I do acquisitions for them. And then I began to speak at writers' conferences. And now that's really scary because people who edit Sunday school take-home papers are the Rodney Dangerfields of Christian publishing. Yeah, no respect, no respect. But as I entered the inner sanctum of editor and publishers' meetings and stayed in the same rooms with them, I just discovered the shocking discovery. These people have mortgages. They have bosses who don't appreciate them. They have kids with braces and ADD. They have holes in their underwear. So we need to slay some of these giant misconceptions of editors. And the biggest giant out there is the idea that editors love to humiliate writers. I mean, sending out rejection slips is more fun than kicking the dog. But you've got to understand that editors need us. Without writers, little hard to produce a book or a magazine. And that's the reason that editors leave their spouses and kids. They sit in airplanes. Airports and cramped airplanes. They eat greasy fast food. They sleep in strange beds. They have a week of celibacy. The glamour of jet-setting editor wears off rather quickly. And so most editors I know love meeting writers. And discovering new writers is what I love most about being an editor. It's going through the unsolicited pile or the slush pile is like panning for gold. And when you find a real nugget, even Wesleyans, dance around the office like they just discovered the mother lode. It is a lot more fun sending out checks and contracts and rejection slips. So if you have something you think might be appropriate for Vista, which is the take-home paper I edit, there are some freebies out there on the table. There's some writer's guidelines. I would love to talk to you. There's, again, that is my joy to discover new writers. Now, another misconception is the bigger the publishing house, the harder to get published. That's basically true, but consider this. Wesleyan Publishing House does about 30 books a year, 30. Somebody like Thomas Nelson does 375. It's all about perspective. And that's why I love the story of David, because it's all about perspective. Every day, Goliath would strut out of his tent. He would blaspheme the name of God. He would belittle the Israelites. And the Israelites would go, oh my gosh, he's too big to hit. Little David walks out there, probably 98 pounds soaking wet, and goes, dude, He's too big to miss. It's perspective, ladies and gentlemen. David goes out there looking at Goliath from God's perspective. And we need to look at things from God's perspective. And the first thing we need to do is to change our perspective of editors. Editors are our friends. I want you to repeat that after me, boys and girls. Editors are our friends. I knew you could. Because you're a what? All right. Arabic number 2 is perspective of God, not to be confused with perspective of editors. We are not alone in this battle. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your writing career. Elaine Colvin loves to talk about divine appointments, and I have sensed many of them in my so-called writer's career. September 25th of this year, I will celebrate 42 years. I know I don't look that old, but I will celebrate, I do. I'll celebrate 42 years as a published author. Started in high school, my sophomore year, I started doing a humor column for my high school paper. And it's encouraging to look back and see how God has orchestrated my life. For instance, I went to my first writer's conference by mistake. Mount Hermon sent an invitation to Wesleyan Publishing House to the editor who preceded me, and I had no idea that Mount Hermon is the biggest, most prestigious writer's conference in the entire North American continent. And I wrote back and said, well, she's no longer here, but I'll come. And then, you know, I really got terrified. But through that accident, the door to speaking at writer's conferences opened up. At a writer's conference in Florida, that resulted from the California conference, I just happened, and I love that term, just happened. Because in God's economy, there is no just happened. This is all a part of God's plan. I just happened to meet the editor of Tyndale House. That led to 3 books. It also included the inclusion in 4 anthologies. At another conference, I met Dennis Hensley, and that led me to teaching a class with Michael Smith at Taylor University. Well, Michael moved to Regent University to play racquetball with the producer of the 700 Club, and before I know it, I'm on the 700 Club. In case you don't know it, that is the Oprah of Christianity. That's where you go to sell books, the 700 Club. I would have never gotten there if I didn't meet Dennis, who knew Michael, who played racquetball with the producer of the 700 Club. So if you're willing to trust like it depends on God, and work and study like it all depends on you, God has some exciting things for your writing career. Now, you may not be the next Max Lucado. You may be the next church newsletter editor. You may be a writer for take-home papers. But God will use you because what?
I'm a giant killer.
Oh, you're kind of fading on me. Let's try it again. You're a what?
I'm a giant killer.
All right. Let's move on. Let's go to verse 29. And David's older brother Eliab heard what he spoke to those at his table, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he saith, why comest thou down hither? And with whom have I left thy minimum wage job in the steel mill? I know thy pride and the haughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou might meetest the publishers. So number 3 is a perspective of yourself. We need to kill the biggest giant out there, and that is the giant of I'm Justa. I'm Justa is a far bigger giant than a 9-foot Goliath. I'm just a beginner. I don't know what writer didn't start out as a beginner. So if you don't know a byline from a deadline, if you think a query has something to do with alternate lifestyles, you're in the right place. Because it takes at least 10 years to become an overnight success. You might say, well, I'm just a housewife. Well, back in the 70s, a work-at-home mom began collecting ideas how to spice up her marriage. And she collected scraps of ideas in shopping bags. That was her filing system, shopping bags all over the house. Sent them to a publisher. She became the number one best-selling writer of the 1970s, Maribel Morgan and the Total Woman. You might say, well, I'm just a factory worker. Well, there was an unsuccessful screenwriter, kind of dragged his tail home from Hollywood back to work in the ski factory. His book was rejected by at least 25 publishers. He became the biggest writer in the 1980s. His name was Frank Peretti, This Present Darkness. Well, I'm just a missionary. Well, he sent his devotionals from his church newsletter to a publisher. The book went out of print almost as soon as it was published. He went to another house called Multnomah, and he became the best-selling author in the 1990s. His name is Max Licato. And so today, there's a I'm just a, you fill in the blank, there's a I'm just a sitting, maybe, sitting in this audience tonight who will be faithful in small markets and become the author of, I'm not sure what we call this decade. Zeros, the uh-ohs, I think, because it's, I keep going, uh-oh. So this is the uh-ohs. Maybe someone sitting here is the next writer of the uh-oh generation. Then there's a giant of, well, I'm just not good enough. And our writing will never, ever be good enough. If I am satisfied with something I wrote a year ago, or even a month ago, then I've stopped growing and developing as a writer. So I am rewriting stuff right up to the moment I click send. And as soon as it comes out, I go, ah! Weak lead, passive verb, clumsy transition. James, you are such a hack! But that means that I've grown as a writer. I now can see bad leads and weak verbs and clumsy transitions. So don't let I'm just a beginner get to you. Don't let I'm not good enough get to you. Another giant is others' perspective of you. When I was writing full-time as a freelancer, and I'm doing that now again, my grandmother and my mother-in-law kept calling up with this concerned tone in their voice saying, Jim, have you found a real job yet? Assistant pastor called one day and, quote, can you help on the prayer committee since you're free mornings and afternoon when other men are working? Excuse me, but I'm working. Click. So here are some smooth stones to deal with others' perspectives of you. Get yourself some business cards and stationery because people with real jobs have business cards and stationery. I've asked several people for their card and they kind of looked at me like, so make sure you can go to Vistaprint and get them free. But please use the KISS principle. Keep it simple, saints. Christian writers don't have to have a card with a cross, a quill, a dove, an empty tomb, or for charismatic tongues of fire. You don't have to announce yourself as professional writer. I mean, would you really want to go to someone who bills themselves as a professional brain surgeon? What other kinds are there? Hi, I'm a hobbyist when it comes to brain surgery. No, simply put, brain surgeon or writer on the card. So keep it simple, saints. Do it professionally. If you got a friend, somebody at a community college who's taking graphic design, make sure it's simple, it's clean, it's classy. So get some business cards and stationery. That real thick stationery, you can clean your fingernails with the corner of it. You want that stuff. Keep business hours. Just because you're home during the day doesn't mean you're free to watch the neighbor's kids while they go to the mall. Dress for success. Author and editor Virginia Muir, who was instrumental with Ken Taylor producing the Living Bible way back when, she says she cannot write without a nice dress, makeup, and heels. Now, it may work for Virginia, but I feel awfully silly. I did find, though, when my kids were little, I actually had to put on a tie because when I'd come home from Wesleyan Publishing House, I'd yank off my tie, I'd put my sweats on, and I became Dad of Death. And we had these big wrestling matches. We were throwing cushions and jumping on furniture, and my wife is going, I have three children. But I was Dad of Death. I think there was a fearsome faith and pulverizing Paul. So when I got my sweats on, I was Dad of Death. So when I tried to write in my sweats as a freelancer, kids were throwing cushions at me and jumping on me. And I'm going, okay, I tell you what. When Dad, I would just take a tie and just kind of wrap it around my neck like a Sopwith Camel pilot. When Dad has his tie on, you do not interrupt him. Two exceptions. Fire arterial bleeding. Daddy's working. And they were really good at it because they knew that Daddy had to work to pay for their private school because Mom was in seminary. And so when Daddy had his tie on, he was no longer Dad of Death. He was Dad, the man who wrote stuff so they can go to Lakeview Christian School. So sometimes just, you know, doing little tricks like that. I have a friend who wears his writer's jacket. It's the one with the little, you know, patches on the sleeves. And that's his writer's jacket. At a writer's conference in Indianapolis, I got a writer's hat. And it's a black hat. It's got white writer emboldened across it. Whatever it does, you know, I usually write in my jeans and a ratty t-shirt. But whatever it does, whatever you're dressed up like, your writing needs to be dressed to the nines. Because that is your professional appearance. So your business cards, your manuscript, your website, even though you're writing it in your underwear, it's got to be dressed black tie, formal attire when you put it out there. So part of that battle then is perspective. And I want you to walk away here tonight believing in your heart, say it loud, say it proud. Very good. Let's jump down to verse 31. And David saith to those at his table, thy servant shall present an editor with a proposal, a table of contents, chapter summaries, and 3 sample chapters. And those at the table saith as one to him, thou art not able to go to the publishers, thou art but a youth, and they have been editing from their youth. And David saith unto them, thy servant has been faithful in attending writers' conferences, in subscribing to the Christian Communicator, and in journeying on to night class. And I went forth and did sell short stories and devotionals unto take-home papers and denominational magazines for 3 cents a word. Behold, I have a portfolio of published works for which I shall go out to meet the publishers. David moreover saith, and the Lord hath caused thy servant to be published in smaller markets. He will deliver my manuscripts into the hands of these great publishers. And they saith unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. So Roman numeral number 2 is persistence. Roman numeral number two, persistence. Arabic number 1, then, is persistent in preparation. I have a friend who feels he is called to medical missions. I'm sure he's sincere. I am sure that God has indeed called him. However, I am not going to let him take out my appendix until he's finished medical school and his residency. And the same is true with writing. God may have told you to write an article or a book, but he is not going to write it for you. Contrary to my absolute favorite cover letter. Dear editor, God dictated this article to me. I don't even know what it says. I wanted to write, you know, I sent him that I'm sorry, it does not fit our editorial needs at this time. But I wanted to write, how dare you accuse the omniscient, creative God of the universe of writing this crap. See, writing is less than 10% inspiration. It's probably 90% perspiration. And the reason I reject 99% of the articles and book proposals that come my way is a lot of it's just lazy writing. They didn't read the writer's guide. I edited a magazine for Wesleyan Publishing called In Touch. And I continually got manuscripts on therapeutic massage. And some of it was less than therapeutic massage. Read the writer's guide. They didn't rewrite. Writing is the easiest thing you will ever do. Rewriting is the hard work. And so if it's easy to read, it was probably really, really hard to write. But you're a giant killer because you're at this conference. And we need to be taking courses, classes at the community college, going to writers' groups. Make sure if you're in a writers' group, it is a writing group and not talking group. Because a lot of groups get together and talk about writing, but they don't ever publish. They don't ever submit. So join a writers' group that's actually going to critique your work, that are actually published. Arabic number 2, persistent in practice. You know, I started to learn to ride a bike. I didn't go to the library and check out A Philosophical Approach to Two-Wheel Conveyance. I didn't take a class at school called Bike Riding Basics 101. No, I got on, I fell off, I skinned my knee. I got back on, fell off, skinned the other knee. I got on, fell off, skinned another knee. We learn to ride a bike by riding a bike, and we learn to write by writing. And again, there's a danger of becoming a talking writer rather than a writing writer. They love to talk about it, but they don't do it. But you need both training and practice, because you're a what? I'm a giant killer. All right, verse 38. But gazing upon his proposal, those sitting at meat at the table saith unto him, Thou canst go unto the publisher, thou must write this again in our image and in our style. For behold, no publisher doth bring forth what thou hast written. And they rewrote David's proposal and sample chapters in their own image, in the style of their own making. But David saith unto them, I canst go with these revisions, for I have not proved them. And David went forth with his original manuscript. So Roman numeral number 3 is personality. Personality. Finally got my braces off my teeth in college. I had to wear these retainers at night so your teeth didn't move back around. And one night, someone stole them. These are custom made for my mouth. Why would you steal somebody's retainers? So I walked around campus the next day looking for somebody who looked like this because they had my retainers in their mouth. And some editors and some writing books say, find the style of the magazine and write in that style. Now you're going to stand like this. So experiment with all kinds of genres until you find a style that you find your unique style. I've had curriculum, devotions, essays, fiction, hard news, poetry, reviews, scripts, even song lyrics published. But I feel most comfortable and have had the most success with writing nonfiction with a lot of humor. And so when I was asked to write for leadership, this very distinguished journal for professional pastors, I wrote this very esoteric and erudite and scholarly book review that would have made my theological professors so proud of me. I got a 2-page letter back from the editor basically saying, lighten up, Watkins. We enjoy your irreverent style. So now I'm writing a column each issue for Rev magazine. It's on the back inside cover. And interestingly enough, it's called Irreverent. So apparently that is my style, is irreverent. But a lot of writing books will suggest discover the style of the magazine, then write in that style. Wrong answer. Write in your style and then look around to find a publisher that suits your editorial needs. You need to tell a publisher, I'm sorry, but you don't fit my editorial needs at this time. We need to if we go the first trial, it's going to sound like this, because we got somebody else's retainer in our mouth. And the writing is going to be as awkward as David stumbling around in Saul's armor. So be yourself. Be yourself. You know, I could try to be a second-class Max Lucado. I could try to be a second-class Frank Peretti. But the best I can hope for is to be a first-class Jim Watkins. And I hope that's what you're here for, to be the first-class, insert your name here, because you're a what? I'm a giant killer. Verse 40. And behold, in the current edition of the Christian Writer's Market Guide, it was written there was a certain editor which did procure and did purchase and did publish manuscripts of such that David hath written. And he took his proposal in his hand and chose him 5 well-polished stories from his file and put them in his portfolio, and he drew near to the publishers. Verse 48. And it came to pass, when the editor arose and came and drew nigh to meet to David, that David hasted and ran toward the publisher to meet the editor. And David put his hand in his portfolio and took thence the proposal and struck the editor with a single pitch, so that, yea, it sank deep into his mind. Number 4 is persuasion. Now, first of all, to be persuasive, you have to buy Communicate to Change Lives in Person and in Print. This is biblical and behavioral principles for how you actually change lives. But you know what? I really hate promoting my own books. But to kill giants, we have got to get over this false humility of, I wrote this book and, it's not really good and, I feel like God inspired it, but you really don't want it, do you? If I truly believe that God has given me a message, that needs a public hearing, I need to promote it. Because what does the word message begin with? M-E-me. And God always sends his message through a me. God does not use committees. God works through individuals. You'll find that all through the Bible. Gideon, Moses, Joshua. They're individuals. And so it's helped me to kind of get over that feeling of, I hate self-promotion, to realize if the message doesn't have me, it's simply sudge, which sounds too much like sludge to me. So if you want to, if God has given you a message, it's going to get out by you and me. And if I remember right, Jesus said something about hiding our message and burying our talents. So in obedience to the Lord Jesus Christ, let me tell you about a couple more books. This one is called Squeezing Good Out of Bad. It's based on Romans 8:28 and 8:29. And if you are unemployed or your spouse is unemployed, you can go to my website, jameswatkins.com, and you can download a copy free. So I want you to have this book. It's going to change your life, and it's going to help you have a new perspective on life called Squeezing Good Out of Bad. It's top 10 ways to deal with the lemons in your life. And this one's called Writers on Writing. I had the privilege of editing this. It's by people like Jerry Jenkins, Liz Curtis Higgs, James Scott Bell, Sally Stewart, Karen Ball. It's kind of a writer's conference between two covers. And just is everything you need to know. Top Christian authors share their secrets about getting published. So there are three ways that you can persuade a publisher to consider your message. And number one is market research. My agent can get my book proposals through most editorial committees, but it's those people in marketing, those bean counters, who are the hardest to persuade. And as Cece mentioned this morning, it used to be the editors who made the decisions. Now it is the marketing people, the bean counters, who make the decisions. So you've got to prove to them your book's readership. Never ever say, everyone will love my book. At the youth division at WPH, we looked for books and articles for just one person. We went to youth camps, went to about 10 youth camps, and we found out who our typical reader was. Her name is Jennifer. She is 15 years old, a Christian. She attends church and youth meetings faithfully. She doesn't have a regular time alone with God and rarely reads her Bible. Jennifer has a pretty good understanding of salvation, but is unsure about the denomination's emphasis on entire sanctification. A good friend has tried sex and drugs. She hasn't. She has a crush on a guy at church, but he acts like she doesn't exist. She has no conviction against dating a non-Christian, but is not sure where she stands about marrying a non-Christian. So as I would go through when I was editing a teen book there at Wesleyan Publishing, I was looking for articles and books that would appeal to Jennifer. So know your audience. Know exactly who you're writing for. And you can do that by getting writer's guidelines. They will tell you who their typical reader is. Another secret that nobody else will tell you, but I will, is write to their advertising department and ask for their reader profile. And you'll get a complete detail, gender, socioeconomic status, what books they're reading. It's just incredible the amount of information they have, because they know that advertisers want to know exactly who their market is too. So get the writer's guidelines, but also write the advertising department at your favorite magazine and find out who their typical reader is. So number one is market research. Number two, what's the book's competition? How does this book differ from the warehouse of other books on the subject? How is yours different? What sets it apart? The thing that sets apart Squeezing Good Out of Bad, as far as I know, it's the only humor book on suffering. It's a top 10 list on dealing with suffering. So as far as I know, it is the only humor book on suffering. So that's my niche for that one. Number three, how will you sell your book and get rid of that warehouse of books? Again, the publisher is going to ante up about $50,000 to publish your book. That includes design, editing, marketing. You've got to convince them that you're worth 50 grand. And so part of your proposal is really going to emphasize the marketing of your book, how it is different from all the others on the market, and how it is unique, and it's going to reach a unique market as well. So buy a copy of Sally Stewart's Christian Writers Market Guide. It'll tell you exactly what genre, style, length, equally important what they're not buying. Grab all the sample copies out there, writer's guidelines, you can stuff in your suitcase. And then number two is your sales pitch. You need to condense your article or your book down to a three-word synopsis. For communicate to change lives, my three words, and I stole them right from Aristotle. Aristotle wrote this wonderful book on persuasion called Rhetoric. And his three words were logos, which is intelligence, ethos, which is integrity, and pathos, which is intensity. So my three words for this book were integrity, intelligence, and intensity. And if you have all three of those and they line up, you will be a persuasive person. So I had to cut everything out of here that did not easily fit into integrity, intelligence, and intensity. And so once you have those three words, you can create what's known as the elevator pitch. It needs to be one breath. You need to say, I'm writing a book that shows how by using integrity, intelligence, and intensity, you can persuade people. Keep it about 25 words or less. I remember being at Sandy Cove, and I met a man. I said, well, tell me about your book in 25 words or less. I said, oh, no. It's going to take me at least a half hour to tell you about my book. And it was about numerology. Somehow if you take the dimensions of Noah's Ark and multiply them by the Ark of the Covenant, you found out the date Jesus was returning to Earth. It was really bizarre. But aside from the bizarre nature of the book, you cannot expect an editor to spend half an hour listening to your pitch, because that editor has got to be able to pitch that to the committee in one breath. That committee has got to be able to pitch it to the sales force in one breath. When that salesperson goes into the bookstore, they've got to describe your book in one breath to the bookstore owner. And so if you don't get it down to one breath, it's very unlikely that you're ever going to have a book, because you've got to get it condensed down. Otherwise, it's too vague, it's too unfocused. So that one breath pitch is incredibly important. And then the third item, your market research, sales pitch, and then finally promotional samples. Don't you just love samples at grocery stores? I mean, Sam's Club is a great place, or Costco, to have a cheap date. I mean, you know, you get free food samples, but it's a bit of a conspiracy, because the Cajun-style sausage is always next to the aisle before the soft drink samples. So after you've had one of those thermonuclear wieners, you're going to buy whatever is in the next aisle. Give me some of that water. They're creating a thirst. And you need to do that with your writing. You have to have tear sheets, clips, sample chapters. They're going to create that kind of thirst. And so by having a well-thought-out sales pitch to a targeted audience, you've got your tasty samples, you show an editor you're a what? I'm a giant killer, verse 50. So David's proposal prevaileth in the house of the publisher. Therefore David taketh his pen and signeth a contract. And the people of Israel and Judah went out and did arise and did buy the words that David wrote. Now, does everybody have a smooth stone? I need a smooth stone, Cynthia. Why don't you put it in your right hand? Thank you. Make sure you get yours back. Okay. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to keep this smooth stone in your pocket or your purse for the rest of this conference. So when you get discouraged, I want you to reach into your pocket and go,
I'm a giant.
And so what I want you to do is to visualize the giant that's standing between you and publication. Maybe it's fear of editors. Hopefully after you've met me, you realize they're not frightening at all. Maybe it's the fear of submitting articles. Maybe it's self-doubts. Maybe it's that 9-foot giant of I'm just a. Or maybe it has absolutely nothing to do with writing. Maybe it's the giant of abuse, of alcoholism, a broken home, a church split, depression, physical challenges. Have you got that giant in your mind? Now, I'd like you to hold that, and I want you to think about three examples here. Let me share you about how powerful these stones are. Now, there's nothing magical about them. They're from Lowe's Home Improvement aisle in Marion, Indiana. But I met a man at Sandy Cove who reached into his pocket and said, I got this stone 15 years ago in Philadelphia. And Chaplain Charlie is a chaplain at New Jersey Maximum Security Prison. He just passed away a couple years ago. But at the time, he was 5'2", probably weighed 100 pounds, soaking wet. But he would go in there and he says, I look these lifers in the eye and I tell them, I'm a giant killer. Heard the story of Charles Lyon. He is the pastor of a large church in Houston. I think I met him at Dallas. It may have been at Frank's seminar. He received his giant killing stone in 2006. Several months later, he's threatened by a mugger in a parking garage. He reaches into his pocket and tells the mugger, what you don't know about me is I'm a giant killer. He took his stone, doubled his fist, and belted the guy in the mouth, knocked him clean out until security could arrive. So these things are powerful. And what are you? I want you to hold up like Black Power salute. I want you to look that giant in the face, and I want you to glare at him. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for this room full of giant killers to whom you have entrusted a life-changing message. And I pray that you're going to give them perspective of who they are. They are a child of God. They are a creation that you have destined to fulfill your purposes through the written word. Father, I pray that you'll give them persistence in the face of rejection slips and editors saying does not suit our needs at this time. I pray that you will help them rejoice in their personality. Love Cease's prayer this morning, God, show me who I am, even how wonderful it is. And then finally, persuasion to defeat those giants that are keeping them from getting that message out. And Father, if there are giants in their personal lives, I pray they'll be victorious over those as well. Particularly during this weekend, I pray, Father, you'll give them courage, encouragement to remember that despite perhaps some discouraging news or maybe that critiquer just really shredded their manuscript apart, to hold on to that smooth stone and remember they indeed are a giant killer. Amen. What are you? Go kill some giants.